Chapter 3 Seagram finished off a margarita as he waited in a little garden restaurant just off Capitol Street to have lunch with his wife. She was late. Never in the 8 years they had been married had he known her to arrive anywhere on time. He caught the waiter's attention and gestured for another drink. Lena Seagram finally entered and stood in the foyer a moment, searching for her husband. She spotted him and began meandering between the tables in his direction. She wore an orange sweater and a brown tweed skirt so youthfully it made her seem like a co-ed in graduate school. Her hair was blonde and tied with a scarf, and her coffee-brown eyes were funny and gay and quick. "Been waiting long?" she said, smiling.
18 minutes, to be precise," he said. "About 2 minutes 10 seconds longer than your usual arrivals."
"I'm sorry," she replied. "Admiral Sandicker called a staff meeting and had dragged on later than I'd figured."
"What's his latest brainstorm?"
"A new wing for the Maritime Museum. He's got the budget, and now he's making plans to obtain the artifacts."
"Artifacts?" Seagram asked.
"Bits and pieces salvaged from famous ships."
The waiter came with Seagram's drink, and Dana ordered a daiquiri.
"It's amazing how little is left. A life belt or two from the Lusitania, a ventilator from the Maine here, an anchor from the Bounty there, none of it housed decently under one roof."
"I should think there are better ways of blowing the taxpayers' money." Her face flushed.
"What do you mean?"
"Collecting old junk," he said diffidently. "Enshrining rusted and corroded bits of non-identifiable trash under a glass case to be dusted and gawked at. It's a waste."
The battle flags were raised.
"The preservation of ships and boats provides an important link with man's historical past."
Dana's brown eyes blazed.
"Contributing to knowledge is an endeavor an asshole like you cares nothing about."
"Spoken like a true marine archaeologist," he said.
She smiled crookedly.
"It still frosts your balls that your wife made something of herself, doesn't it?"
"The only thing that frosts my balls, sweetheart, is your locker room language. Why is it every liberated female thinks it's chic to cuss?"
"You're hardly one to provide a lesson in savoir-faire," she said. 5 years in the big city and you still dress like an Omaha anvil salesman. Why can't you style your hair like other men? That Ivy League haircut went out years ago. I'm embarrassed to be seen with you."
"My position with the administration is such that I can't afford to look like a hippie of the 60s.
"Lord, Lord," she shook her head wearily. "Why couldn't I have married a plumber or a tree surgeon? Why did I have to fall in love with a physicist from the farm belt?"
"It's comforting to know you loved me once."
"I still love you, Jean," she said, her eyes turning soft. "This chasm between us has only opened in the last 2 years. We can't even have lunch together without trying to hurt each other. Why don't we say to hell with it and spend the rest of the afternoon making love in a motel? I'm in the mood to feel deliciously sexy."
"Would it make any difference in the long run?"
"It's a start."
"I can't."
"Your damn dedication to duty again," she said, turning away. "Don't you see? Our jobs have torn us apart. We can save ourselves, Jean. We can both resign and go back to teaching. With your Ph.D. in physics and my Ph.D. in archaeology, along with our experience and credentials, we could write our own ticket with any university in the country. We were on the same faculty when we met, remember? Those were our happiest years together."
"Please, Dana, I can't quit, not now."
"Why?"
"I'm on an important project."
"Every project for the last 5 years has been important. Please, Jean, I'm begging you to save our marriage. Only you can make the first move. I'll go along with whatever you decide if we can get out of Washington. This town will kill any hope of salvaging our life together if we wait much longer."
"I need another year."
"Even another month will be too late."
"I'm committed to a course that makes no conditions for abandonment."
"When will these ridiculous secret projects ever end? You're nothing but a tool of the White House."
"I don't need that bleeding-heart liberal crap from you."
Jean, for God's sake, give it up.
It's not for God's sake, Dana. It's for my country's sake. I'm sorry if I can't make you understand.
Give it up, she repeated, tears forming in her eyes. No one is indispensable. Let Mel Donner take your place.
He shook his head. No, he said firmly. I created this project from nothing. My gray matter was its sperm. I must see it through to completion. The waiter reappeared and asked if they were ready to order. Dana shook her head. I'm not hungry. She rose from the table and looked down at him.
Will you be home for dinner?
I'll be working late at the office. There was no stopping her tears now.
I hope whatever it is you're doing is worth it, she murmured, because it's going to cost you a terrible price.
Then she turned and hurried away.